Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively at Pappas. The crab is over there. The fireplace is over there. The entire Clark family. You want to give a little shout out to everybody that's here, Frank?
Absolutely.
And your whole family's here.
Yeah, my wife is here. My daughter, Kelly, her husband, Dave.
Catonsville Hillbillies. I'm just coming up here to
It's great to get together with family, especially at Pappas, right?
Bordy is... He's subtle. It's the main thing, right? You're underselling here. So I invited him out, and we were going to try to do this a month ago, and it didn't happen here at Pappas. And we said, let's do it again. I didn't even know he liked me enough to come back out a second time. He must have had a good time last night. Yeah. Probably the crab cake. So I invite him, and I said, well, you got to bring Frank, because like that was the whole idea, was you're going to promote your charity, right? And then he hit me this week. I said, is Adam around? Yeah, he's around. We're bringing him out. I'm like, great. And the next thing I know, we got wives and moms and kids, and I feel good about this. I feel like I brought you guys out, and you're going to have a nice time.
We are.
Despite me.
With you. I mean, we're going to have a good time.
All right, so Adam Kalarik's here, Frank's here. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill, and of course, giving away Maryland Scratch-Offs, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming at you in December as well. We'll have a whole fresh slate. I got a lot of places. I didn't know Drug City had a crab cake, so I'm finding places that have crab cakes, and really good ones that I got to find out, beyond Pappas and Costas and Conrad's and my sponsors and Fadley's and the places we go. So I've been wanting to have you on for a long time. I don't know why I never bothered Don to bother you. I mean, you won the World Series. You probably had a victory pizza at Franco's with Lou Winecan before it was all over with, right? And I'm at the Beaumont all the time. I'm at State Fair. Yeah. We had breakfast there the other day. I had dinner at Beaumont last week. I'm at El Guapo. They're my partners, Evan. So I don't know why I haven't had you on, but I felt like there would be... This is a serendipity tour. It would happen when it's supposed to happen, in the way that it's supposed to happen. Right. But you know Moeller and Catonsville... I mean, it's amazing. Like, I'm a baseball guy. You know, my cousin's in the Hall of Fame. I'm here in this country because of baseball, because Bill Veeck was too cheap to pay my cousin in 1964 and dealt him off to the worst place you could deal in, Baltimore. And, you know, Mr. Hofberger was, helpful in bringing relatives of Venezuelan families. And you've been playing in the big leagues long enough that, you know, come off the island and you get to come to America, it's a big deal. It means something. So I am the offspring of that. Mm-hmm. And I have these baseball lifer guys here. But you are Catonsville, man. And like, if my heir was Mike Bielecki, Bielecki's from Dundalk, ahead of me significantly, 9 years older than me. And I got to know Mike when he was pitching for the Cubs in 87, 88, 89. He pitched in Hawaii. You said you pitched in Vegas in the minor leagues. He pitched in Hawaii for Pittsburgh. I think he went 18-3 that year with the sub 2. He didn't want to get called up
because the
Pirates were no good.
I was with the A's in Pacific Coast League, and we were in Ogden, Utah, and we had a trip to Hawaii for 8 days to play the Pirates when they were over there. So I'm a little older than Bielecki, but I remember going over and playing the Pirates.
Now, you were Moose Haas era.
Like, keep going.
No, who were the kids? Well, you weren't Swoboda, right?
No,
you weren't.
Larry,
but I mean,
Larry Meekins, Bob Worthington, you know, those kind of guys played around town.
Bordy, you know this in the 90s because you came here. You probably read the paper, even though athletes. So we'll get to your University of Maryland stint the other day. But there used to be a thing in the paper called Marylanders in the Minors.
Sure,
okay?
That's right.
Now, my father knew of you because my father loved every local kid. My dad coached Little League, right?
Yeah.
That's who my dad was. So I learned early on that Moose Haas was coming. I learned early on about this Cal Ripken. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not the coach? No, not that guy. The kid. But I saw when Cal Ripken played, there was a kid at Curly, Tim Norris. It was unbelievable. I saw him pitch as a Pony League player at Eastwood Fields, right? So local and baseball, and all I dreamed of doing is what you did and you did and you always wanted to do, like... I love baseball. It was my life as a kid. Baseball cards, all of that stuff. But for Baltimore and you growing up in Camden Yards, I mean, your experience as a young kid here, watching him play and Cal Ripken and the Ravens coming to town and all that, and they're going to get copies of Purple Rain, too, for parting gifts. But your childhood in baseball in this city and you aspiring to do this, it's one in a million, right? I mean, what made you think you could do it?
That's a great question. Every year that I've played baseball since I was a kid, I just wanted to keep playing. I just wanted to make the next team, try out for the next team, and keep playing.
Don't take it away from me. Don't take my glove, right?
Yeah, and it never even now, you know, I still have to pinch myself at times to realize what I've been able to do. And I think it's going to take 10, 20, 30 more years for it to all sink in, because right now, you know, when you're going through the ups and downs, you're just trying to keep your head above water and try to block out a lot of the noise and the situations that you can't control. So for me, some of my best memories are still the Catonsville travel days and the Catonsville high school days. And I'm still friends with all those guys that, you know, that was baseball to me.
I think I met half of the Francos over the course of time.
Yeah, I mean, Catonsville's a special place because people don't want to move away. You know, they love the community.
They wouldn't let me come in. Moeller wouldn't let me move there. He's like, you're not from here. You know, you can't come out. You know,
we're good. Nah,
we're full.
It's a special place. And getting to, I mean, it's so easy to get down downtown from Catonsville, and we would pop down Wilkins Avenue and drive all the way, and we had the special parking spot right by the B&O Railroad Museum, and we'd walk to the Camden Yards, and we'd pack sandwiches and buy peanuts.
What's your
favorite
experience as a kid at being at the ballpark? What do you remember about being there?
Well, I mean, that era of the 90s was such a special time, you know, you think about who was playing and who would come into town. You know, we'd circle, you know, Ken Griffey coming to town with the Mariners, and Jeter and the whole Yankees team coming into town, and getting to see, you know, Cal and Mike. And I mean, I pretended to be all those guys in the backyard, the whole lineup. Alomar.
I was
Anderson.
Bumbry and Murray, and that's Singleton, Porter Rocks. Yeah. That's who I was.
Anderson and Alomar and Hoyles and Eric Davis and Jeff Rebillet. Like, I mean, all those guys, like Messina, I mean, obviously the pitchers, but.
Rebillet, really, you love that, didn't you? Reb would love that too, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, those are the names I grew up with, and watching on TV and checking the box. I mean, I would, you know, I remember back then you would still check in box scores and this and that. But yeah, I mean, we'd go to games on school nights, and you know, sometimes have to leave at seventh inning, but we have it on the radio on the drive home and hope to catch it.
It was better with John Miller, but don't we get to that? That's my whole story.
Of course, John Miller was best, and. But no, and then catch the end last ninth inning, you know, at home on the TV before going to bed. And it was just what we did all the time.
Yeah.
I loved day games during the week. You come home from school and the game was already on, and you know, it's 3 p.m. It's probably the sixth inning and you're catching the last hour. So like the Orioles mean a whole lot to me, just, you know, because it's a part of our family and just how we grew up. And the first time I got to play there was when I got to play in the Brooks Robinson All-Star game in high school. And I just remember standing on the mound about to pitch. You know, it's an empty stadium except for parents in the, you know, behind home plate, basically. And you look around. I just felt like I was in a video game. It just looked like this. Or, you know, you've been to Times Square or, you know, New York City, and you just see the big buildings. That's how big Camden Yards felt for the first time on the mound. It's just daunting. You know, and you go see other stadiums, and you realize, you know, there's even bigger ones out there. But when you're on the mound and you look up and you just see nothing but stands, as opposed to, you know, playing at Catonsville High School or Maryland, where you can, you know, see the woods and you see the street and you see
singled off Peter Schmuck in the media game in 92. That's all I got. Yeah. You know,
it counts.
You know, I did pitch hit and run at Memorial Stadium when I was a kid. I won in Patterson Park summer like 78. I was like 10 years old. Mm. Had the little Tom McCann plaque, and I went at Memorial Stadium. And I choked. I mean, I don't think I hit the ball out of the infield. And some kids could really hit it. And you know, but to be a kid and to do that. And
I got to tell you real quick that for years I was scouting and throwing batting practice. So I was a catcher, and my graveyard was BP. I could throw great BP. And for a number of years, I was doing some scouting with the Orioles. And then I would, with the big club, I wasn't on the road, but I would throw BP. And, you know, if you do a good job, they keep having you
back.
My
dude Gary Kendall, man, throwing him, right?
He followed me. So I was before Gary.
Okay.
So he followed me. But the point, what I'm saying is that once or twice a year, I would take Adam down with me through the clubhouse. And this is Palmeiro and Cal and all those guys, that era. I threw back in 82 or 3, and then I did it three different times. But when Adam was, you know, I guess 12 or whatever, used to take it
younger,
probably nine.
Five, he remembers. Five, six, you remember seven, everything eight, about it, right?
Five or six. I would take him with me and running through the club. And the guys were great. I mean, they treated him like I was a player. But Ad would go down. He's a kid, and he's like, the first time we went in, the Orioles are in the clubhouse, and everybody's in their, you know, their undershorts, walking around, getting ready for the game, and And he was kind of, he had a ball. I gave him a ball and a pen, and he just kept walking around and looking. And what Baines is in there, Palmeiro, and Cal used to sit back.
Cal's in the corner.
He's in a corner. Yeah. And that's like going seeing the ultimate Santa Claus. And you remember? Yeah, of course you do. And he walked up. He had his ball and his
Mr. Ripken.
No, he didn't say anything. And Cal just said, hey, how you doing? How old are you? You know, and he mentioned his how old. He goes, I guess you're in such and such a grade. Couldn't have been any better. So, want me to sign your ball for you? You know, and hand it. But for me, that memory, all right, of Adam going in the clubhouse as a little guy and then getting comfortable and the guys treating him that way. And then to see him pitch at Camden Yards, you can't describe it. But to have that longevity and that path that he's had. And he's right. And now to this day, it's about do you still love it, you know, and are you still getting better? And as long as you can answer that yes, yes, then keep going.
It's one of the great stories that keeps a guy like Bordick around, right? Like Baltimore and baseball. It's a special baseball place, really.
Oh, my gosh. Especially these two, their stories. There's a lot more to their – his baseball story is amazing. And one day you're going to have to sit down, spend about an hour listening to the journey that he's had.
I'd love to, man. That'd be
it's
great.
Pretty amazing. But the fact that they both, you know, grew up here, played in Catonsville. He went to the Catonsville Community College and then went on to be a Terp. You know, he went to Maryland as well. So, I mean, this is the heart and soul of Maryland baseball right here. Both of them going on to play professional baseball. Adam fortunate enough to be in the big leagues and win a World Series ring. Are you kidding me? That's what people get excited about. The same thing holds true up in Maine. You know, they had Mainers in the minors as well. The list wasn't as long as you know, Maryland guys in the minors, but there was still that kind of following where guys would kind of see what guys were doing and things like that. So, I mean, it's special to be around these guys. They're well-known and respected throughout the state for what they do.
Well, you know, every Brian Coates that was ever, you know, I mean, yeah. We were always just like pulling for the local guys. Brian Jordan, just, you know, the names that we have a chance. So, you win a World Series, man. Like, once you won, I was convinced Mueller was going to drag you on with his kid or this or that. And I'm like, you know, leave him alone. At some point, I'll run it. At some point. Was there an aftermath of all of that that was a little strange? You know, I mean, are you still pinching yourself to something? Do you still look at it and say, really? Or what do you remember of that? Because I think you would even say your World Series run it. It happens fast, right? And you're in it, and you're in it, and you're in it, and then you're drunk, and then it's the more, and then it's over, and then it's over forever. Other than you see it on TV, right? Or
that's
because once
part,
it's over, it's over, right?
That's really. I mean, you know, you watch October baseball this year, and then they'll flash back to the recent champions, and you see mobbing, you know, at home, on the pitcher's mound, and everyone running from the bullpen and the dugout. So. Seeing those flashes of the highlights, you know, kind of like, wow, like, you know, you're sitting at home watching it, and you're like, dang, I was there.
That was big.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, on top of it all, I had my wife and son with me. That was my son's first birthday. It was the day we won the World Series. So he was on the field with me, and we're holding the trophy, and I got him barefoot on home plate, and he's crawling around. So that's, I mean, just like when you, I mean, again, pinch yourself. I couldn't make any of this. I mean, I was in Double A for almost 4 years, and before I even turned sidearm, that's just part of like the story of, you know, how long
making it yourself into a major leaguer.
Yeah, so it was just, you know, that's why I think I need a lot more time for stuff to sink in, because in reality, I still just feel like the Catonsville kid, the Maryland player, and everything else has just been a whirlwind.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming out and telling your story today and having a crab cake with us and all that. I got to ask, because you guys know I got thrown out now of the Orioles and the Ravens because they don't like questions, right? So the athlete relationship with media, right? You did a symposium. I haven't watched it yet, and I want to encourage everyone out there. I think I might be standing in Bordy's way. I want to encourage everybody out there to give it a go down at the University of Maryland. David Steele was here earlier. He was going to be a part of it and got sick and wasn't there. But, I mean, legends like Christine Brennan, John Arand, you were one of the athletes. Torrey Smith was there. This was a serious conversation about how the world's changing for relationships. And I mentioned earlier, you know, I got 100 baseball players in my phone. I had 1,000 football players and coaches and world champ, like all these people that I've collected great people I've collected in my life. That's the part that's really pissing me off, is that I don't know you and people of your era because I have been shut off from that, that I don't really know Adam Jones, although he does read. Hi, Adam. He sent me a nice note about one of the pieces I did recently. I didn't like, hey, Adam Jones is watching my ish. Great. But I haven't been in a clubhouse in a long time because I haven't been allowed to know you, right? And that's kind of we're in a different place here. And I hope that the symposium sort of went through how much change has happened between you and you and you, where they're begging for media. They acknowledge the media and the game's nice and everybody's making some money to the point where, like, the media's rat poison. You know what I mean? Like, literally, the Nick Saban role, right? And I don't know where that is, but I miss this. I do. Even with younger guys, even though I thought you were younger than you are, I like learning. I all that stuff you're doing with your – I like all that. Mm-hmm. That makes me a better journalist, fan, broadcaster, educator, public speaker. It just does. If that's missing, there's something missing, I think.
No, absolutely. And I think the symposium really did a good job of pointing out that it all comes down to relationships, mm-hmm. right? A respect for a journalist, a respect for a player. Sure, they may have to write some tough things sometimes, but I think for the most part, a lot of players, at least in my era, didn't even read the newspaper. Very rarely was there any kind of scuttlebutt in the locker room unless – you know, Albert Bell might have said a thing or two back then. But nowadays, it's so much tougher with Twitter and the social media. Because
Twitter's going away this weekend. I'm sure it'll be gone by the time you see this.
Yeah, things get put out there. But it still comes down to relationships, ultimately. And I think in anything you do, whether it's a journalist-player relationship or whether it's family relationship or whether it's coworkers, things like that, you have to respect what they do, understand that they have a job to do as well, and you're trying to work together to try to better the game of baseball. And at least, when Torrey Smith was there talking with Mike Preston about, you know, bettering the game of football, the relationship that they developed and so on and so forth. So really, ultimately, it always comes down to the relationship and whether or not you respect the person in front of you. And even if you don't, I think to some degree you have to be a pro and take care of business the right way.
Well, Adam, you've had a whole different thing, right? I mean, in Tampa, not a lot of scrutiny. Then you go to L.A., and all of a sudden it's Hollywood and you're a Dodger, and then all of a sudden it's Oakland and can't get fans there, right? And that's the part that kind of breaks me. Like, even this week with the Ravens, and I'll do my thing with them, but, you know, tickets are going to be $20 for the game on Sunday because it's going to be chilly, and, you know, fans coming out and wanting – Tampa wants to sell tickets. Oakland wants to sell – you know, like – And you are the product, right? And to shelter that in any way is probably not great business from my perspective, but also protecting whatever you're doing in a clubhouse where you're trying to win a world championship, that I would think that you've learned different things in different places and had people come at you in different ways, right?
Absolutely. And my situation was a little unique in 2020. You know, obviously, everything went, you know, virtual as
right,
far as the
right,
media,
of course,
too.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a, you know, I was at that place. Yeah, in 19, I was traded to the Dodgers. So I had a little bit, at the end of 19, seeing the media in the locker room and, you know, still having those interactions.
I forgot that we all got locked out for 2.5 years.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So that played a big role in what I've seen. But also, you know, when I go to a bigger market like L.A., again, now I'm in this locker room and I couldn't be just happier just to be there. And, you know, you think of who else is on that team, who's getting the people at their locker asking questions. It's not me, you know,
right.
And I'm fine with that. And, you know, I'd much rather hear from Clayton or Justin Turner or, you know, an all-star player. So seeing them deal with, you know, the pressure of having to answer questions after big games, wins or losses, you know, it's just, again, just as a fan and as a kid, you know, now getting to see that as part of my daily job it was just really unique. And, you know, it's impressive how all those guys can handle it.
I love Dodger Stadium, man. Yeah.
Nothing like it. I went out to see Adam for a homestand with the Dodgers and then went down to San Diego. And, you know, he got in maybe two or three games. It's beyond thrilling, beyond. But, you know, Ad and I have been in a lot of ballparks together. But to go out to L.A., get to the stadium, you know, same routine I've been doing for, you know, a long time. And I go to the stadium and to look down there, and Adam, you know, tells the usher, hey, let him through, and boom, boom, boom. Next thing you know, we're standing on Dodger Stadium just talking like we've been talking since Catonsville. You know, it's just
when you drive up that hill, Chavez Ravine, and you the gates are there, and and just palm trees.
It's a little
man, you
bit
feel like you're
heaven.
Somewhere. You
yeah,
know,
a little
you
bit
know.
Of heaven.
Well, I did 30 ballparks in 30 days back in 15. When my wife got cancer in 14, we swabbed for the bone marrow registry. About 19 places gave me a table, and I did every single day. I only had one rain delay in Colorado. Had a couple of rain outs for BP, a couple wet BP, but I made it through. No sickness, no missed flights. I did get in and out of Canada without my passport. That's another story altogether. But Dodger Stadium, I made it number one. I thought it was my favorite stadium. I love Royal Stadium, too. And the new stadiums, I mean, Pittsburgh's beautiful. Yeah. San Francisco's beautiful. Our place is beautiful. But I Dodger Stadium, to me, I mean, no offense. I mean, I'm not a Wrigley guy, per se. Fenway's got its thing. I like it and all, but give me a game at Dodger Stadium. If I'm going to go somewhere and sit, I got real jealous watching those Dodgers Padres games about 6 weeks ago. I thought, man, that would have been drive out there. I can go to all of them, just wear my ball cap, put some suntan lotion on, you know, put my Padre jersey on. You know, it would have been fun. But that stadium to me is. Do you feel that way, are they all one and the same to you?
No, it's a whole. Maybe comparable, you know, just with Yankee Stadium or Fenway with the history behind it. But just coming down the elevator when you go towards the locker room, you pass, you know, 30 gold gloves of all the guys through the years and all the MVP awards and Cy Young awards. It's the history that you walk through just to get to the locker room that adds to it before you even step out onto the field. And to see, you know, however much capacity it has empty, you know, pregame, and then watch it fill up, and by the, you know, seventh inning have it be jammed packed on a Tuesday night, is nothing better.
You know, the Oakland Coliseum, and I'm not making a tremendous comparison, but before, you know, the Raiders came back,
Mount Davis
was built in center field, you had a beautiful view of the Oakland Hills, and the Oakland Coliseum wasn't too shabby a place either. Very comparable, just aesthetically, to Dodger Stadium.
Seeing old
they're
pictures.
All going away, you know?
I know.
All right, Shift. I want to talk last thing for you guys. Shift. I mean, we're going to have a different style of baseball, right? I mean, pitchers not hitting is a different style. I mean, there's been a lot of change between you and you, right? I mean, and you're back with the DH with all that controversy back in 73. I was just a kid growing up. But the game's about to change. The rubber band's coming back now, maybe, right?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, right? They're you know, stopping the shift and bringing players back on the dirt. And I'm not a big fan of that. I think, you know, if you want to change the game, let the opposing offense try to beat the shift.
Learn how to bunt.
Hit the other way.
Right.
Maybe play more situational-type baseball. I don't know that it should be a mandate that you have to play in a certain position on a baseball field. You know, shifts have been going on forever, and it was up to hitters to try to make their adjustments with their swing. So, yeah, I'm not totally on it. It may bring back a different type of baseball, which I think hopefully is really ultimately the goal, to kind of bring back more stolen bases. There are bigger bases out there. Bring back more of a situational type of baseball that I think a lot of true baseball fans have missed, instead of everybody trying to swing for the fences every time and every hitter 1 through 9 having over 200 punch-outs. I think they'd rather see more contact. Listen, these are the best athletes in the game right now. Let them play. Let them do their thing. And I think they just get too bulked up sometimes in the shift. But I still think a major league hitter should be able to hit the ball the other way whenever he wants. And I don't care if a guy's throwing 95, 98, or even 100 miles an hour. There's an art and a swing path that you could, you know, perfect by pulling your hands inside the baseball, which used to be, I think, part of a natural baseball swing.
Well, guy coming out of a bullpen, right? How many batters you have, pitch clocks, shift, all, I mean, going to change the game for you a little bit? Change the way you think about it a little bit?
Yeah, the pitch clock is a real, real thing that's going to, I think, take people by surprise this year. And fans by surprise, and big league players who haven't played in the minors by surprise in recent years.
What about you? Hey, give me...
Well, I mean, this year was the first year they really instituted those rules at the AAA level. And when I got sent down, I was called for 2 balls, you know.
Okay.
I mean, didn't get the shot off in time, and they called me on it. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting when, you know, you have, you know, I think...
Just 2, though.
Yeah, on two occasions I had
so
that.
Your father
happen to
told
me.
You make a mistake. You don't want to make it twice, right? Right?
Yeah. So
I got your dad here.
So yeah, but it'll be interesting. You know, when they try to impose that rule on, you know, Verlander taking too long to make a pitch or somebody, you know,
human rain delays, right?
You know, where, you know, different things were maybe, you know, allowed for a veteran player to do versus a rookie. Now it doesn't matter. And I'm not talking about strike zone. I'm just talking about if they're going to institute this rule, it has to be across the board. And, you know, guys are going to have to pick up the pace. And I think players like it because, I mean, we were playing even high-scoring games, and they would be 3 hours, even sometimes under, even if it was a 15-10 game. So I think it's going to help baseball a lot with if they're really that concerned about the pace of the game, which is, you know, obviously everyone, no one wants to be there for 4 or 5 hours every night for 162 games. So it's a good thing. It's just going to take some adjustment. And it's, I think it'll be entertaining to watch. I think there'll be some incidents where you know, games might be won or lost because bases are loaded, the crowd's loud, and 3-2 count, you better be ready. I felt like a couple times I was like shooting at the buzzer because I'm like looking it and I get the sign. And in AAA, we didn't have the intercom thing that big leaguers have with the pitch, you know, on the wristband, and you click fastball and you hear the voice that tells you to throw a fastball. Because
that, dude, that's way, how can I, you know, play, right? The game, I'm that like, way?
Yeah, yeah.
What is this, the Jetsons, so or no, are we playing baseball?
There's no more signs in the big leagues.
I mean, I don't want to be the old guy here, but I'm the old guy here when we're doing this, you know?
But yeah, they're going to have to come set and be ready to deliver the pitch on a timely matter, or else the umpire might have to ball you, and maybe that'll be the winning run sometime.
What about the pickoff thing? You only get a couple of times.
So you have three chances, and from the third chance to pick somebody off, they're still safe. It's a balk, so you get the base. So you have three to play with. And if you pick off,
we're all making faces here.
Yeah,
like,
that's a weird one.
Who's coming up with this? Who's making these rules? What about the guy on second base? What the hell is that?
Yeah,
that speeds it up for sure. I'm glad they don't do it in playoffs. But
I thought it was interesting.
No more 18 inning games. You know, it's over in 11 and 12, and you're not playing. And because that's the other part. You know, they're making all these different rules about calling guys up from the minors, and now that's limited to a certain amount. You can't do it 100 times. You have only 5 times you can send somebody up and down. So you play an 18 inning game, or then another 15 inning game, now you're short on pitching, you need to call somebody up, and now you're affecting.
You're the guy that gets called up, though. It's good,
it's
right?
It's good for me. I know I'm not saying that I'm in favor of it, but it's just, it does speed up the game, and you know, it allows for people to maybe stay healthier and pitching staffs not to be stretched so thin sometimes.
In AAA last year, there was at home plate, we get three challenges, right, for balls and strikes. That was very unique. So if an umpire calls a ball, pitcher thinks it's a strike, he can challenge the call. And it'll literally come up on the scoreboard if it's a ball or strike. And if he wins the challenge, then they don't lose a challenge, right?
Yeah, it's similar to tennis where they're tracking, you know, you see the you know, in or out. I don't think
they're going to do away with umpires at some point, right? They're just going to have a box, right?
We tried
like
that.
Like we did on the wall. We had a wall in Colgate with a red box, and he stood in front of the wall with a pinky, and, you know, it hit right in the box, you know? But I'm only 2 feet tall. I was like Freddie Patek. the box is up here. What the hell do you mean? You
know? They were experimenting with the robo umpires as well in AAA, which was interesting to watch, and you see guys with a big curveball that drops, you know, at that last second, and you know, anybody watching the game watches the catcher catch it down here, and that's clearly a ball, but it's clicking, you know, the computer strike zone and saying it's a strike. So it's just, they're experimenting with how they're going to potentially use it, and I hope they don't do the challenges. I didn't think that was baseball at all. But
it was interesting to watch the hitters on that curveball, for an example, and they get it ready to turn around and give the umpire some.
A dirty look, right?
Or grief, and the umpire. I don't call it.
Pitcher's definitely got the advantage there. At least he would initially, right? Because even sliders.
It's a hitter talking.
Catch the ball.
Man, we go at this all night.
Yeah. Sliders catching the front of the
plate. Yeah, and it's really big for when you don't hit your spot. You know, if you're aiming low and away and you yank a fastball up and in, and clearly the catcher had to reach for it, like that ball is never being called a strike from the umpire's perspective. But if it clips it, you know, a box strike is a strike. So I think, you know, it at least eliminates
bad umpiring.
Yeah.
Or also eliminates preferred pitcher zones, right?
Yeah, I think it can. I think it helps and hurts both ways. It's just if it's accepted, then you know it's hard to accept a hanging curveball that looks really high, but if it clips the top of the zone, you know you never want to swing at that because right. It's not a pitch you can. You know, it's above the hang. You know, the one you want.
You get
hit.
Done this thing, learn yeah. that thing, and then yeah. you know you get 10 more years in your
yeah,
career.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
For me. How long are you gonna play? Until they take it away from me.
Yeah, I mean, until they stop calling, I guess at first. But like I said, I have a little one at home, and as long as they still enjoy the life of you know the ups and downs that it can bring, you know, and as long as I stay healthy, I'm happy to keep
playing. Make your family nervous, right? Too, you like that, right?
Well, there you say.
There's probably nothing like that as a parent, right?
There really isn't. I mean, you know, as many, and it's funny, as many years as I've been around it and all my experiences, when Adam takes the mound, there's still a feeling like no other. I mean, maybe childbirth, but, you know, you really, you can't describe it. And when he was in the playoffs and the World Series, I mean, I'm like a cat on a hot tin roof all day till 8:15. And then I know he's not coming in till about 10:15, you know, if it's going to be the sixth or seventh inning. So being in relief, it's just a whole different dynamic to it. But it's so exciting. Never gets old. Dorothy and I have gone to a million different ballparks, minor leagues, spring training, big leagues. And it's a thrill beyond words. Just so proud and happy for him. And you know what he goes through with his wife and the little guy and you had to do as a having a family in Major League Baseball. People don't see. They watch the 705 version. But they're at the field.
Well, that was the thing is me as a journalist, getting back to that piece, where, yeah. like, I just had so much respect for all of them because I showed up at the ballpark at 2 o'clock to get to know you, to have a relationship that 30 years later I would call you and say you want to come out and do a turn. We'll do something nice together and enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. Like, I respected that because I saw right. what went. Right. And I was a kid. I was a fanboy, right? You know, like, and then I wind up in the locker room like, man, this is like.
Very different.
Tough work, tough on families, tough on just doing your laundry. I mean, I knew Messina real well. We were both bachelor guys and good friends when he was still bachelor. Like, just 10 days of, like, being on the road and coming home and throwing laundry together and not, like, and that was 30 years ago, right? It's mm-hmm. I remember saying, I maybe told you this. I went up to Cal Ripken's locker. I wasn't a little boy, but I was a young man. And I made small talk with Cal all the time, still do, you know, about skim milk versus whole milk. That was like one of our little gigs because he never drank skim. You know, he had the milk mustache and all that. And I said to him, I said, hey, Cal, this is now 1993, 4, 5, somewhere in the range where he was the most famous guy on earth. I said, hey, Cal, man, I'm going down to Ocean City this weekend. You got a favorite place down there? He's like, Nessa, I've never been to Ocean City in my life. So I play baseball every day. I've just never been to Ocean City in my life.
Right.
Must be nice. I'm like, well, that's a damn thing. How could Cal Ripken never be to Ocean City, you know? And that's when it started to sink in. Sacrifices are made here, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's fun. It's, you know, thrilling, mm-hmm. right? Profitable, lucrative, tough. But it's a different thing than fans understand, really. Yeah?
Yeah, it comes with the territory, I think. And you realize the time that you do have home is so valuable, you know, this time of year, the holidays and seeing all my family I didn't get to see during the summer. You know, that's a very special time. And, you know, I think we can all relate that, you know, when baseball is your focus, you know, that was the weird, really weird part of 2020. It was, you know, being home in the summer, you know, seeing my neighborhood with leaves on the trees. You know, when I come home, they're falling off. And before I leave, it's snowing on the ground. So it's just
wow,
literally just the right. visual of, you yeah. know, pulling out of my street and I can't see because the, you know, the leaves are so full and it's just a weird time to be home when you're home in April, May, June. So yeah, it's just part of the schedule that we live. And you know,
well, maybe you'll be home next summer in a different way. And
yeah.
For you, what is this process like? What is it?
Well, I mean, right now, you know, after I got sent to the minors, you know, with the A's, you know, as I approach this off season, you know, I know that a big league job is not guaranteed, certainly not to start spring training. So for me, I'm just looking for a team that likes me and still sees value in me. And, you know, I can, you know, start with them in spring training, hopefully show well. And, you know, worst case scenario, hopefully just start out in AAA, earn my way back to the big leagues. And that's kind of been my career. You know, I've made the most of my time and know that, you know, circumstances are – you know, you have to wait for your spot, you know, whether it's an injury, a trade. Next thing you know, I mean, when I got traded to the Dodgers in 19, I was in the big leagues with Tampa. But when I got pulled aside by my manager, I thought I was being sent down because that's the only other conversation I've ever had with a manager was you're going up or you're going down. And if you're up, there's only one place to go. So when I got pulled to the side, I remember we were at Fenway Park and about to, you know, go out for BP. And he tells me I just got traded. I couldn't believe it because, you know, that I didn't think that was an option. You know, it was either up or down. So,
man, that's weird,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go back to your locker in Boston, take your jersey off,
yeah,
right? Like,
I flew that night and was in the Dodger pen the next night. It's just, my wife was...
Had you been to Dodger Stadium before?
As a kid. As a kid, just to watch a game. Had not played there, but it was, yeah.
Did Janet Marie give you a big tour or anything like that out there?
She did.
She gave me too.
Once.
Yeah, we went out.
We did do a tour together, yeah. So that was really cool.
Great.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you. Appreciate you coming out.
No
Adam Clarick, Frank Clarick, my man Mike Bordick. What are you doing? You doing anything? Brock, is there anything other than this? Because you always like talking about this. You got things happening?
I got a couple things going on. Yeah, still giving lessons over at the Baseball Warehouse. I love going out and speaking to kids and parents. And
so good at it.
Companies, whatever. I'm also an investor and advisor on a new startup company called Alloy Sports.
What is that?
It's a research-based betting platform.
Okay.
Kind of create your own algorithm and try to enhance your betting. And so that's pretty interesting to be a part of. A couple local guys started it up, so it's fun to see it grow.
I'm not skeeved out by the betting with sports in general, but it is weird to me. And the baseball side of it is, I've been doing sports radio 31 years. I've had a lot of degenerate gambler types call the show and, hey, Nasty, who you like? Do you like the Bears +8 this week? Now, I did 30 years of that, right? And I picked games back in the day on the radio. I made a bet in Vegas 20 years ago because I was there on a buy. It was the same weekend I saw the crotch chop. I was in Vegas that weekend, and game 5 happened. We flew up. I've made one football bet in my life, but I get people to bet on football. My dad had pool cards at the point. I've never known anybody, who bet on baseball? Like, in a, I make money, I do this, I'm into it, it's +7.5, minus, I never even understood how to bet on baseball. I didn't even understand when I'm in Vegas. I'm like, what does that number even mean? Like, and you're betting on starting pitching that doesn't matter anymore because there's no such thing.
It's pretty crazy now.
But every ad.
Bet on everything.
Every ad. And I keep saying, I was at Greenmount 2 weeks ago. I said, one of the big things is, When we were young, not you because you're younger still, but the racetrack, gate would fall when the horses, the bell would ring, when the gates opened for the horses, the gate fell, and that's how you had no improprieties, right? I mean, I'm seeing a game here, 2 second delay, 1 second delay. He's on the mound. Is he going to throw a ball or a strike? How do I do it? What do I know? Where's the timing? Is it in tape delay? I know it's coming. He's not, listen, don't, la, 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 you're not allowed to listen. But it's coming, and it's television all day long, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
There is a future for all of this, big time.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's taken over. I mean, look at the hypocrisy, I think, in baseball especially, being sponsored by, like, DraftKings and things like that. They still won't let Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame, you know. But
I'm watching Ravens lounge acts where the helmet has a betting logo on it, and they've got the starting cornerback for this week's game on the set. And I'm like, you're starting to weird me out now. I'm old. I'm not that old, but I'm starting to itch a little bit. It's making me scratch a little bit.
And it's not going away. It's getting more popular. They just, I think Maryland's online now. And
mobile this week.
Yeah. So I think 26 states have legalized gambling. So, you know, it's a pretty big industry, obviously. And I think it's exciting to see some local guys start this up. I'm not a gambler myself.
I want to learn about it.
I'm just part of this crew. And
Alloy Sports.
Alloy Sports.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, come tell me about it. Well, I mean, Maryland Lottery sponsors us, and John Martin was on literally yesterday talking about getting this mobile to the finish line. And, you know, one of the big things is bordering the states. Like, if you go across the state line above Hereford, you know, like that you can't make a Maryland bet in Pennsylvania. You know, like, this is what they're doing this week. It goes online Wednesday. So you'll be able to bet on your phone on the Thanksgiving games if you want. And maybe Buffalo will actually get to Detroit by then. I'm not sure.
That's right.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Absolutely.
And the love affair that Moeller's grandchildren have for you has been just – it's that – that's been the child in me watching that. So I figured if I ever got to this point, I'd say, those kids love you. I said that when you walked in. I'm like, the Mullard kids love you.
That's
you
right.
know. So keep up the good work in Catonsville. Maybe one day I'll get to ride in the Catonsville parade with him, 4th of July parade.
It go. Can happen.
Can't get
it
a seat happen. Over there, though. You know, they already got the chairs out. Catonsville's finest, the main event, Mike Bordick, the Kolarik family, including mom, dad, sister, babies, brothers, all that good stuff. We're out here at Pappas. All brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play on that. I'll be giving some scratch-offs away next time we get together. Our friends at Goodwill, big thanks for everybody who has participated on Wednesday to help us out in feeding less fortunate folks on the 23rd downtown. And, of course, Window Nation, keeping us nice and warm, especially. I got new windows in August. It was like the best thing I've ever done now that it's getting cold, because I'm not freezing anymore inside of my house. And I mean that. 866-90-NATION. Go check them out. Bordy, the Clarks, myself, we're signing off from Pappas, where we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive. Stay with us.